bipartisan renewable bill ruptured by rancor over January 6, read by an automated voice. How bad is the partisan rancor in Congress? So bad that even a hearing Monday on a bipartisan bill to speed development of renewable generation on federal lands was marred by sniping between Republicans and Democrats over the January 6 attack on the Capitol. Representative Paul Gosar, House Natural Resources Committee. The hearing of the House Natural Resources Committee's Subcommittee on Energy and Mineral Resources was on the Public Land Renewable Energy Development Act, or PLARE-EDA. Representative Paul Gosar has been pushing the bill for 10 years, along with, since 2019, California Democrat Mike Levin. After parts of the bill were included in the Energy Act of 2020, Gosar and Levin hoped to get the remainder over the finish line this year. But last week, Levin reintroduced the bill by himself, telling Gosar he would not permit him to be an original co-sponsor. Gosar responded by introducing the bill under his name. Representative Mike Levin, House Natural Resources Committee. Natural Resources Committee Chairman Raul M. Grijalva noted that Gosar's bill is identical to Levin's. So we know that we agree on the policy. But it's important to note the attack on the Capitol was a threat to our democracy. The ongoing refusal to accept the results of the presidential election is a threat to our democracy. The ongoing efforts to invalidate the election results in my home state of Arizona is a threat to democracy. Grijalva said he planned to co-sponsor Levin's version but promised to hold a hearing on Gosar's as well. Disturbing precedent. Representative Pete Stauber, ranking member of the subcommittee, said the Democrats had strong-armed Gosar to take credit for the legislation. I find it insulting, said Gosar, whose Twitter feed is topped with a photo of former President Donald Trump and features video of his appearance at an America First rally last week with firebrand reps Matt Gaetz and Marjorie Taylor Greene. Regardless of the wide gulf between Republicans and Democrats here, we know there is room for bipartisanship. The Public Land Renewable Energy Development Act was at the top of the list, Stauber said, calling the Democrats' actions a disturbing precedent. However, two other Democrats, Representative Betty McCollum and Representative Jared Huffman, said there was nothing new about such partisan gamesmanship. It's also happened to me, McCollum said. 25 gigawatts goal. PLARE-EDA would direct the Department of Interior to establish priority areas on federal lands for the development of geothermal, solar, and wind energy and create a program to improve coordination of federal permitting procedures. The bill also would provide host counties with increased revenues from such projects. The Energy Act of 2020 directed Interior's Bureau of Land Management to create renewable energy coordination offices and to authorize the production of at least 25 gigawatts of geothermal, solar, and wind energy capacity by the end of 2025. Not a Wolf Culver, Bureau of Land Management, House Natural Resources Committee. BLM currently hosts less than half that amount, including 36 wind projects totaling more than 2,900 megawatts, 37 solar projects over 7,000 megawatts, and 47 geothermal projects totaling 2,500 megawatts, said BLM Deputy Director Nada Culver, who told the committee the bill aligns with the Biden administration's goals. Culver said BLM is considering updating the solar energy zones that designated 285,000 acres for development in 2012, and the Westwide Energy Corridors that were designated in 2009 to facilitate pipelines and electric transmission. She said BLM has identified another 19 million acres of public lands with solar energy potential outside the solar zones in California, Nevada, Arizona, New Mexico, Colorado, and Utah. BLM also manages more than 20 million acres in 11 western states that have been identified with wind energy potential. H.R. 3326 would define public lands as either priority areas preferred for renewable energy development, variance areas that are potentially available, and exclusion areas not suitable for development. The bill would require Interior to update the categorizations in the final programmatic environmental impact statements, or PACE, for geothermal, solar, and wind, and to review the categories every 10 years. The bill also sets a new revenue distribution structure for receipts from solar and wind development on public lands, with 25% each going to the states and counties involved. Another 25% would go toward funding BLM's renewable energy program, and 25% would be deposited in a new renewable energy resource conservation fund. Virinder Singh, EDF Renewables, House Natural Resources Committee. Also testifying in favor of the bill Monday were Virinder Singh, Vice President of Regulatory and Legislative Affairs for EDF Renewables, Kate Miller, Director of Government Affairs for Trout Unlimited, Paul Thompson, Vice President of Business Development for Geothermal Developer Ormat Technologies, and San Bernardino County Supervisor Don Rowe, representing the National Association of Counties. Trout Unlimited's Miller said while her group was pleased to see some provisions of PLARE-EDA enacted as part of the Energy Act of 2020, it was disappointed that the heart of the bill was left behind. The bill before the committee today would carry those key provisions forward, including provisions on updating the upfront planning process for solar, wind, and geothermal energy development and the revenue sharing program that will support responsible development of renewable energy resources on public lands in a way that invests in local communities and in fish and wildlife resources, she said. Given the history of broad and bipartisan support for this bill, as well as its legislative record and all of the stakeholders anxious to realize its benefits, I implore you to please work together to advance these provisions through the House. Time for an update. EDF's Singh cited research finding that the U.S. will need to increase its annual deployment of renewable energy by 2 to 3.5 times the current annual rate to meet climate goals, or about 60 gigawatts annually over the next decade. He said only 6.2% of large-scale solar projects and less than 1% of installed wind capacity are on federal lands. We clearly need to do more to make federal lands relevant to our clean energy future, he said. Singh praised the bill's requirement to update the 2012 solar PAYS and 2005 wind PAYS by adding new priority areas. In terms of solar project design and technology innovation, 2012 is a long time ago. For example, new solar panel technology can capture more solar insolation and convert it to useful energy, and do so at lower cost, thus allowing for areas of less insolation to be economic today compared to 2012, he said. With new transmission upgrades, transmission flows have changed sufficiently to warrant revisiting priority zones relative to available transmission, he added. The 2012 solar PAYS included 19 million acres of variance lands, with less than 300,000 acres of priority areas. The thresholds to cross to develop on variance lands are very high, he said. One must show that priority areas are not an alternative, address 25 variance factors, and face evaluation of approximately 400 programmatic design features, as prescribed in the solar PAYS. He also called for revisiting how BLM determines the acreage rent fees for renewable developers. Paul Thompson, ORMAT Technologies House Natural Resources Committee. The acreage rent is based on National Agricultural Statistics Service's values for agricultural lands, rather than appraisals of nearby private lands. However, the types of federal lands used for solar development, such as lands in the Southern California desert and in Southern Nevada, rarely have the characteristics of agricultural lands. As a result, the fair market value estimate often is an overestimate, he said. ORMAT's Thompson, representing the Geothermal Rising Policy Committee, an industry trade group, said BLM should allow geothermal developers to use categorical exclusions, or CX, rather than requiring costlier environmental assessments and environmental impact statements for permitting resource confirmation wells used to determine the viability of geothermal sites. Requiring the lengthier, more costly EAs and ISAs creates a disproportionate permitting burden at the front end of the project, before a revenue payback is guaranteed, he said. Allowing use of CX for exploration wells would provide greater parity between geothermal and oil and gas, which is afforded a broad CX for exploration activities, he said.